Good evening. This is
Blog
your small
radio.
Greetings, Just the Freedom Radio listeners. This is your host, Jamal Brown. Today is Thursday, October 20th, and your Black History Fact of the Day is Kenya's first president, Jomo Kenyatta, was born on this date in the year 1893. For more Black Facts, you can always go to www.black365.us. I'm very excited about today's show. We have an outstanding guest, as we always do. We have on the line with us this evening someone from the National Civil Rights Museum there in Memphis, Tennessee. Ms. Meredith Davis, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I am. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself this evening?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. Let's just jump right into it. We have a patented question here on the Just the Freedom Radio. It's a simple one, and it goes like this. Just tell us who is Miss Meredith Davis?
Well, I am a native Baltimorean, and I recently moved to Memphis, Tennessee a couple of years ago. I've been visiting Memphis for the last 10 to 15 years, and I decided to relocate here. I'm also working on my PhD at Rutgers, the State University of New Jersey, in Women's and Gender Studies. And I currently serve as the manager for school programs at the National Civil Rights Museum.
Okay. Awesome. We also have another very important person on the line with us, our co-host, Ms. Asia. Ms. Asia, are you there? Okay, we'll be patching her in shortly. Okay, that's fantastic. PhD, wow. How long have you been working at that?
A long time. I actually took the route as a non-traditional student. I was working at Rutgers in multicultural affairs and diversity for a few years, and I decided to start taking courses in the Women's and Gender Studies department. And I decided that I wanted to get through my coursework, so I actually resigned my full-time position there so that I could finish my coursework and take my exams, and now I'm all but dissertation, and just hoping I can get through that process.
Okay. Awesome. And so tell us how you landed there at the National Civil Rights Museum. And also, if you could, explain your title and your role there.
Sure. So, like I said before, I had been visiting Memphis, Tennessee for several years. My best friend lives in Memphis. Her family is from Memphis. We lived in Baltimore together, and her family all relocated at different times back to Memphis, and so I decided if I ever had an opportunity to relocate, I would. And I happened to go on the website. I was just looking for some intellectual stimulation, so I looked up the National Civil Rights Museum, and I saw they had a lunch and learn program, and the topic was childhood studies. They were looking at a novel, or actually it's like a diary, these young women. It's called Selma Lord Selma, and they had a speaker that came in and talked about childhood studies. And I was just asking some questions because I was really interested in the topic, and the president of the museum and the director of education approached me, and they're like, oh, where are you from? And I told them. They're like, oh, well, do you ever have an interest in relocating to Memphis? And I was like, well, I'm working on my coursework, so it's not possible. And so a couple years later, I called them, and I was like, guess what? I'm in Memphis. And they were like, oh, my goodness. So they were like, okay, well, if we ever have an opening, we want you to apply for it. And so the position became available, and I applied, and I got the job.
That's a beautiful story. That's a beautiful story. Now, tell us, what is the historical significance of the museum, its location, and what it's all about?
Well, the historical significance is it's the location of the assassination site of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., April 4th, 1968. He was assassinated on the balcony of room 306. And so it has a historic significance. It is a part of the International Sites of Conscience, which are several sites or locations throughout the world. We're part of that consortium. And so the location is really sacred ground. It's a space, and it's a place where, you know, something tragic happened, but out of the tragedy comes triumph. The museum has tons of stories of endurance, of courage, of, you know, long-withstanding racial injustice and the ways in which African Americans were treated and how our particular story, because I am an African-American woman, how our particular story has inspired people throughout the globe, from Tiananmen Square to, you know, Eastern Europe, the Berlin Wall, how, you know, that particular story, as it continues, has inspired people globally.
Folks today are still singing We Shall Overcome. It might be in Arabic or whatever language, but they're still singing our song.
Right. I think they were singing in either Egypt or Libya.
They were in Egypt singing We Shall Overcome.
It's powerful that, you know, language can, that, you know, a struggle can transcend language, culture, race, ethnicity, class, all of these things. And when people are struggling, they try and find inspiration. And fortunately, where I work is a location for inspiration.
That is beautiful. That is truly, truly beautiful. Now, help me understand this. The museum, or the hotel, rather, it was just sort of encapsulated. It was almost put into a time capsule and preserved and transformed into a museum, or did it continue to operate as a hotel sometime after? Explain that.
Well, sometime after it did, but like most urban centers in the United States, urban decay took place, and, you know, with the reputation of it being the assassination site, you know, it started to lose business, and so it was actually about to be foreclosed, and there were several key leaders. De'Army Bailey was one, who's a Memphian, and Charles Scruggs is another, and he's a Memphian as well. They decided to create this foundation to be able to purchase the museum. Now, the property is the Lorraine Motel, and the hotel, actually, because it's a motel. It was a motel at first, and then a hotel. Mm-hmm. And so the room in which Dr. King was, you know, where he stayed, room 306, is preserved. The balcony is preserved. So that hotel space is preserved, and the rest of the location, for the most part, had been gutted out and turned into a museum that not only talked about the King story, but just talked about the African-American experience. The first exhibit is 1619. So we believe that the civil rights struggle for African-Americans began with the indentured servitude of Africans coming to the Americas in Jamestown all the way up to 1968. And then across the street we have a legacy building, which really looks at the ways in which the contemporary story inspired people all over the world. Our Freedom War recipients are over in the legacy building. We have the evidence for the state's case of the assassination of Dr. King. We have that evidence, and that's in the second building as well. And so it's several different stories in across the street, but it is a museum. But we did preserve that location, the actual site where Dr. King was assassinated. That has been preserved.
Sounds like a must-see site. It's my first chance I get. From the first chance I get, I'm definitely going to make my way down there. Again,
Hi, this is Asia. I'm sorry about there was technical difficulties I was experiencing before, but I'm here now.
Okay. Great. And I'm also here. I'm Leslie Meredith. I want to welcome you for being a part of our show. And you
Hi,
are
Asia.
Very
Thank
fortunate.
You.
You're fortunate to have two very talented young people. Aisha is also a Rutgers student. So I know, yes. So,
which
she's on the
Asia?
Line, and I'm gonna let Jamal and Aisha take over this interview. And would you do me a favor, Meredith? Would you slow down, take your time, and just tell us, you know, the best stories possible about this hotel? Because I'm really fascinated. All right, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Hello, yes, I am also a Rutgers student studying journalism and media studies. I currently stay on Bush campus, and I'm very happy to be with you all tonight. So thank you for having me.
Nice to meet you, Asia.
You too.
All right. Yeah, Ms. Davis, you were telling us about the long history of the museum. Now, how long has the museum been in existence? I understand you all have a very important date coming up soon. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, actually, September 28th, 1991 is the inception or the birth of the museum itself. And so this year we have been commemorating our 20th anniversary at the museum, so we've had several different programs. And we're really culminating the celebration with the Freedom Awards, which is taking place on Saturday, November the 12th, here in Memphis, Tennessee. And we'll be honoring various icons of the movement as well as legacy and pioneers who have really done a lot for the civil rights struggle. Was that slow enough? I hope it was.
Yes, it was fine. It was fine to me.
Okay, good, okay.
I have a question. So aside from the Martin Luther King assassination and, you know, honoring him overall, what other exhibits are at the museum that visitors can come see?
Well, our exhibits start in the year 1619. The first exhibit is Unremitting Struggle. And that chronicles 1619 to pretty much 1865, the end of the Civil War. We have an exhibit on the sit-ins in Greensboro, North Carolina. We have an exhibit on the Freedom Rides. We have an exhibit on Brown versus the Board of Education. We have an exhibit on Selma, Ole Miss, where James Meredith integrated the University of Mississippi. So it really chronicles major episodes in the African-American civil rights struggle in the United States. So although King is the inspiration and it's actually the location where he's assassinated, we really tell a comprehensive story of the civil rights struggle in the United States.
Ms. Davis, do you have a favorite portion of the exhibit? Tell us about what it is that you know, are fascinated by continuously throughout your time there at the museum.
Well, as the manager for school programs, I'll say that it's not the most exciting exhibit. You know, when you think about, you know, the ability of what it captures, how it evokes emotion, but to me it's the most profound, and that would be the exhibits which are Brown v. Board of Education and Little Rock. And as an educator, I guess for me that culminates really when the question of separate but equal comes into play. And there are several other places in the museum where separate but equal comes into play. We talk about in 1849, Sarah Roberts, a young African-American girl in Boston whose father was a plaintiff in a case where he wanted his daughter to go to a school that was a better quality, that was closer to home, and they lost that case. And that case actually becomes the precedent for the Plessy versus Ferguson. And so, but for me, education is such a paramount and key theme throughout the exhibits. For me, it's my favorite. I love to do workshops in it. I love to explore it because even in 2011, we're still struggling with the 1955, with all deliberate speed, Brown 2 decision. We still have locations in the United States where we know it's unconstitutional in the books. But there are still locations in the United States that struggle with giving, you know, students of color and poor students quality education. And so for me, that really hits home, and that's so important to me. So that's probably my favorite exhibit. I love to talk about it. I love to think about it. I love to look at it. And I just love to see how, you know, even children played a role in this struggle.
So can I ask Ms. Davis, what other events do you have coming up at the museum that, you know, visitors can partake in?
Well, we have what we call lunch and learn programs, and I had mentioned that earlier. But during the day, once a month, we have opportunities for the public to come in. And it really was designed for staff to just inform them of key issues. Last month, our Lunch and Learn was actually on the history of the relationship between the United States and the Middle East. And it was fascinating, the information that we found out that, you know, the first treaty in the Middle East was signed by Thomas Jefferson in Morocco. You know, he was signing a treaty, you know, so just trying to really educate the public and go a little deeper. So that's a Lunch and Learn program. We actually had an opening of a film, and we're having two more viewings. And if you go to our website, civilrightsmuseum.org, there is a location that says NCRM upcoming events. We have an exhibit right now that's Portrait of a Movement, Freedom Warriors, and that really explores all of our Freedom Award recipients and what does it mean in the 21st century to be a leader. We co-sponsor a Gandhi King Conference on Peacemaking with the Peace and Social Justice Center, and that's taking place this weekend. Then we have our public forum, which is Thursday, November 10th, and that's an opportunity for young people to participate in our fundraiser, to at least see some of the recipients of our Freedom Award, and then we have our Freedom Award in November. So we stay busy.
It sounds like it. It sounds like it. Fast forwarding here to the upcoming awards, who are some of the folks who have been invited and who are some of the folks that are being recognized at the event?
Well, some of the honorees, we have Hill Harper. He's a legacy in education, and he's being honored. We have Kirk Whalum. We have Cicely Tyson. We have Danny Glover. He's going to be a part of our public forum that Thursday. We have Susan Taylor. We have Dr. Bill Frist. We're also honoring icons, Reverend James Lawson. We're honoring organizations this year. We're looking at the NAACP and the Southern Poverty Law Center. So we're honoring. We just wanted to do it big this year. So normally we usually have 2 to 3 recipients, but this year we really wanted to honor people who've been icons to the movement. We also wanted to acknowledge people who have, in their own ways, been a part of the civil rights struggle. So those are just some of the names, as well as Usher. He's another recipient. He's receiving a Freedom Award for philanthropy as well.
Excellent. Sounds like there's a whole bunch of great events and wonderful people coming to this award. Sounds like it's
definitely
exciting. So can I ask a question about the actual commemoration of Dr. King's passing? Like, how does the museum honor him on April 4th usually?
Well, usually April 4th, it depends. There have been several different events. Last year we had AXNE, which is, you know, a major union, and they were a part of the sanitation worker strike, which really inspired King to come to Memphis. They had a viewing of a film at the River I Stand. They had a reception for local members. The Alphas every year commemorate Dr. King at the site, and we usually lay a new wreath on April 4 to commemorate. So it really depends, but it's always something that we try to do something reflective, something that really speaks to who Dr. King was as an individual, as a man, as a leader. So it really depends. There's no one particular program we do every year, but we just make note and mention of and recognize on April 4 the assassination.
The mall there at D.C. has recently, you know, been graced with a statue of Dr. King. What role, if any, did the museum have with that whole process?
Well, the museum didn't really play a role with that process. I mean, there are several different entities that express the work of Dr. King, and so we didn't necessarily play a direct role. Prior to the hurricane, however, that was coming, they were going to honor Reverend Billy Kyle in Washington, D.C., and there were several receptions going on that the museum had opportunity to possibly participate in. But it wasn't necessarily a direct connection to the building of the memorial.
I'd like to know, is it true that the square of concrete on the balcony once contained Dr. King's blood?
That is a great question, and if you look really, 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 really hard, you may see something that looks like blood. I'm not quite sure if that is actually his blood. I mean, that has been something that has been said, so I don't want to mislead anyone. Obviously, he was assassinated on the balcony, but as far as that actually being his blood, I can't really speak for that.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about some past events and some of the honorees, for example, last year or last few years or so. Who are some other folks who have been blessed to be awardees?
Well, we've honored Oprah Winfrey. We've honored the Dalai Lama. We've honored Bill Clinton, Al Gore. We've honored one of my favorites, Bono. We honored Bono. We have honored Rigoberto Menchu. There are lots of people that we really have tried to recognize for their struggles, not just, you know, in the United States, but globally.
That sounds wonderful. So,
mm-hmm.
Can you maybe elaborate some more about the school outreach programs that you all have at the museum?
Sure. Well, currently we just received a grant from Target, and we are slotted to bring in 5,000 Memphis City School Title I students to visit the museum and have a museum experience free of charge. We provide transportation and admission. We also, through Bridges, which is a local organization, they have a summer program, and we do we allow them to use our facilities for a couple of days, and they do very intense social justice training, and so we participate in that. We also have King Day, which is coming up, and there's a youth component to King Day, and we normally take that Saturday prior to that Monday to really focus on character education and character development for young people. Last year, our theme was Breakfast Fit for a King, and it's free of charge. All events we have for children are free of charge, and so children came in and we had them decorate crowns, and they talked about, we had someone dressed up as Dr. King and Coretta Scott King and talk about their story. We had a music workshop that took place that day as well. We had Watoto, which is a local dance troupe, acting troupe. They came in and performed. So we try and do a lot of things for kids, and my role also is to go into the schools as well as schools and organizations coming to the museum, but we provide professional development workshops for teachers. This summer I was able to provide professional development training for Memphis City School educators, and they got continuing education credit for it. They got professional development credit, and we explored topics like creating a social justice pedagogy for the classroom. We looked at a thematic approach to teaching civil rights history because, you know, you can get stuck thinking that telling this story is all about a historical, chronological perspective. But you can take literature. You can look at the work of James Baldwin or Langston Hughes. You can look at art. You can look at photography. You know, you can look at science and math and find a way to talk about, you know, the role that civil rights has played in the United States, particularly for the African-American experience. So those are some of the things that we do as far as the school programs and school outreach.
Well said, well said. I couldn't have said it better myself. Tell us a bit about the demographics of the visitors, and also what other historic sites or other educational sites are in the area surrounding you all there at the museum.
Well, we have, I would say, over 25% of our visitors, or at least 20 to 25% of our visitors, are school age. Most visitors come from that southeast corridor. We have visitors that come from all over the world. I mean, last year we had a group that needed in advance the tour guide script so that they could translate into Japanese. We have we just had people who were here last week from London. So people come from all over the world to visit the museum. I mean, it really is that kind of a location. We also have a Slave Haven, which is another, it's a historic site. We have a cotton museum. We have a metal museum. We have a lot of different museums in the area. We also have a children's museum. It's wonderful. We have a museum called Pink Palace that has all kinds of different exhibits for young people. There are a lot of museums in Memphis, Tennessee, and then there's also Graceland is also there as well. And so, you know, you could really spend a few days just visiting and going from museum, place to place.
Mm-hmm.
How did Dr. King's family react to the museum?
Well, I have only been there 2 years, so anything that I would say would be hearsay. I wasn't actually here at the inception of the museum, so I can't really speak for that. But there is a King Center in Atlanta, Georgia, and that is really the epicenter as far as the King family is concerned. That's the location where they really commemorate and honor Dr. King. He was from Atlanta, Georgia. He was a co-pastor, Ebenezer. So that's the location. Have there been possible tensions? Yeah, but I don't necessarily think it's all directed towards the museum. I just think they're very cautious of the ways in which people, which they should be, the ways in which people use Dr. King's name, his image, and his message. And so in that respect, I would say no more than any other organization that may call themselves a King Center or Epicenter or whatever. We are the National Civil Rights Museum. We're the location where Dr. King was assassinated, but our story is larger than that. We're not a King Center, if that makes any sense. So,
I had a question piggybacking off of that one. Has the family ever contributed any original artifacts or anything of that nature to the museum?
I mean, we do have things here from Dr. King, but that's probably more so from his visit to Memphis, Tennessee. The family has visited the museum before, but they have really tried to preserve most of the artifacts and collections of Dr. King really are in Atlanta, Georgia, and some of that stuff is not even at the King Center, but at Emory University, where they're really trying to preserve and keep that information.
Mm-hmm.
I had another question for you. I think you might have touched on this before, but could you just give us some more details about the Facts of the Matter program that you have at the museum? I know that's one of the newest program series there.
Sure. We just had actually a Facts of the Matter with Reverend James Lawson, and it's really just an opportunity to really have a forum to discuss various issues about what's going on in the community. The one prior to Reverend Lawson was a Facts of the Matter about the merger that was taking place between Memphis City Schools and Shelby County Schools, which are two distinct school districts, and there has been a merger of those schools. So that was an information center. It's really an opportunity for the community to come out and learn something new or to hear key political or just social figures within the community to discuss issues that impact the community overall.
Okay, wonderful. And if people wanted to, you know, purchase tickets to come to the museum or even to take part in maybe some of the events like the Facts of the Matter program or the school outreach or even the Lunch and Learn, how could they go about doing that?
I would say first visit our website, which is civilrightsmuseum.org, and it'll give you information about ticket pricing, times we're open, the programs that we have, whether they cost, whether they don't cost. All that information is available on our website, or you can always call the museum directly, 901-521-9699, and ask for whatever it is you're interested in knowing more information about, and someone will be able to assist you.
Awesome. Could you give that number one more time, a little bit slower, please?
Sure, 901-521-9699.
Awesome. Now, do you have any awards for community activists, young or old?
Well, actually, a part of the, and that's something that I really wanted to talk about, a part of the public forum, which is for young people, we have a Keeper of the Dream Award, and that really is an award to inspire young people and to motivate them to continue the legacy of Dr. King and those who have preceded them. And it's really designated to Shelby County and Memphis City residents, grades 6 through 12. And they don't necessarily have to be students that are always in the front of the class. They could be students that are just community-oriented, civic-minded, that really are interested in helping other people. And we present that award on November 10th this year. We present it at the public forum. And nominations usually come through teachers, but we expanded that to be not only teachers, but parents, community leaders, churches, whoever thinks or thinks that there is a young person that is worthy of that award, they will nominate them. And so actually our deadline of this year has been extended to October the 25th. And so that's one of the ways we honor young people at the museum. And that's sponsored by International Paper as well as the National Civil Rights Museum.
Can I ask another question about the actual the balcony? Why aren't visitors allowed on the balcony?
Well, for the most part, it really is for the preservation of the balcony. I mean, the more people that are on the – I mean, we haven't done anything to really change the infrastructure of the balcony. So it really is a way to preserve the balcony. We have to date have had over 3 million visitors. So if we were to allow every person to get on the balcony, by the time we probably would have got to the 525,000 visitor, it really would compromise the structure of the balcony. So what does happen often, well, not often, but sometimes is, you know, the Freedom War recipients are able to go on the balcony. We had for our 40th commemoration of Dr. King's assassination, we had news stations and television stations from all over the world. People were on the balcony then, but for the most part, we usually just, the balcony is a really sacred place. And I've never even walked on the steps on the balcony, and I'm not necessarily sure if I'd want to. I mean, it is really a sacred location, so you know, people. It's not just a place to spectate, but it's a place to, you know, reverence and a place to really reflect. And so we try to maintain the integrity of the balcony. We don't have a lot of people on it, so it really is a way to preserve it. The same way you can't walk into the hotel room. It's a matter of preservation.
You mentioned earlier one of your awardees for this year is Miss Susan Taylor. Tell us what stands out about her in your mind as to why she should be a person worthy of an award.
Well, to me, Susan Taylor is an icon of African-American womanhood. She was a former editor-in-chief of Essence for a long time. She started her own line of African-American cosmetics for black women prior to Essence. She's a motivational speaker. She's very in touch with who she is as an African-American woman, and I think as an African-American woman, we can never have enough mentors and models who not only talk the talk but walk the walk, and she's definitely one of those people. She gives back to the community. To me, she's a quintessential black woman. I mean, she really is interested in reaching back and helping people, and she's also mindful of where she came from.
So could you tell me why you're honoring Usher? That's one of my favorite singers, favorite artists, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners admire him as well. So could you tell us what he's done or why he's being honored at this award ceremony?
Well, he's being honored for his philanthropy and the work that he's done. He's established a foundation that really helps young people with leadership, you know, trying to motivate young people, talent, education, career and service, to just make sure that young people are successful. So he's giving back to the community as well. And he's a legacy recipient, which means that, you know, all of his work isn't spoken for yet. There's still a lot more work that he may be doing in the future. But this is a way, so we have these icons and we have these legacies and we have these pioneers. And the pioneers are those who have done the work for a long, long period of time. The legacy recipients are those who have really taken up the mantle and are starting to do the work or have been doing it for a while, and we just want to recognize them and let them know that, you know, we honor the work we do, that they do. We appreciate it. And so he is being honored for his legacy in philanthropy.
Awesome, awesome. What is or what portion of the night are you most looking forward to for the upcoming awards?
I'm looking forward to hearing the legacy recipients. I'm looking forward to the public forum. I'm looking forward to hearing Danny Glover talk about his work as an activist, how he's been an activist way before he was an actor. I'm looking forward to the inspiration, just being in the room and being able to be around people who have committed their lives. But I'm really interested, and I can't wait to hear the recipients and what they have to say and what this award means to them and what they and you know how they have been inspired by those before them to really do things in the name of social justice.
So would you mind like giving some details about like the pioneers, the ones that some other ones that you mentioned?
Sure. So I mentioned Dr. Bill Frist. He was honored for his work with
African hospitals. He did a lot of missions work abroad. He's written several books. He's done heart transplants. I mean, he's a doctor, but he's also a political figure in the state of Tennessee. He's a he's from Tennessee, and he's really committed to helping others health-wise, but just overall, just, you know, with health prevention. He's been a part of nonprofit organizations. He's really reached out to help children and refugees throughout the world. And so he's definitely being honored for his humanitarianism. We also have Bill Russell, who is, MBA Hall of Famer, but he also is a man throughout all of this that has stood up for his convictions and his beliefs. He was at the March on Washington. He is a civil rights activist, and he's also an athlete, and so we're honoring him for sports and community service. And so these are some of the pioneers that we're looking at. And like I said, Danny Glover, he's an actor, but he also has, you know, he stood up for union workers' rights. He spoke out with the Hurricane Katrina issue. He has spoke out about Haiti. He really is someone who is interested in really challenging people to exercise their rights as citizens in the United States and global citizens abroad.
Beautiful, beautiful. And last but not least, Hill Harper, tell us why perhaps he was being awarded and sort of what sort of reaction has he had that you're aware of to being awarded?
Well, he hasn't called me directly, so I don't have a direct response, but he's accepted the award, so he seems to be honored to receive the award, and I'm assuming he has. He's been honored for education. He's a legacy in education. He has created a nonprofit foundation, Manifest Your Destiny. He's written several books to young people to really inspire them to start at a young age to question the goals and the career choices they make, the life choices they make, the path that they want to lead. Because, you know, there's no such thing as, you know, deciding at 35 you want to become something, which is possible. But if you haven't done a lot of the legwork or the back work, you know, it's more difficult. And so he's really about shaping the minds of young people, and so he's being awarded for education.
Mm. Okay, wonderful. Well, I just want to thank you for being on with us tonight and sharing all the information that you shared.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And I believe that we are going to wrap up for the evening. Again, this is Blog Talk Radio on the Freedom of just the Freedom Radio Show. I'm Asia Grace, and I thank our guests and our.
Okay. Thank you, Meredith, for being a part of our show.
Thank you.
I have one more question I wanted them to ask, and that was, have you ever honored a survivor that was there with King as far as the awards?
This year we're recognizing Reverend Billy Kyle. So
okay.
He is, and he was actually on the balcony the day of the assassination of Dr. King. We're honoring him this year.
Okay.
He's one of our icons.
Well, it was very educational and informative, this interview. I wish you guys the best of luck and success, and hopefully we'll get back with you and have you back on the show.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Meredith. Have a good night.
Bye-bye. You too. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.